Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics. You'd think it's spring break, but it's snowing here in Missouri. We are joined by Congresswoman Ann Wagner, who is fresh back from the Ukraine-Poland border. Gosh, what'd you see?
It was amazing. It was heartbreaking in so many ways, and I can talk about the incredible flow of refugees that we saw coming, fleeing from Ukraine over into Poland. I can talk about the unity that I saw among our European allies and our members of NATO. I can talk about the strength and the resilience of a Ukrainian people who we met with from both civil society and from their government that really just want everything that you and I have, freedom, liberty, to live in peace and prosperity, live their lives. And they have been brutally attacked and invaded a sovereign country of 44 million people by Vladimir Putin and his Russian army.
Why did they think he's doing this?
They believe, and I think everyone does, that he wants to rebuild the old USSR. Mm-hmm. And this is about a land and power grab. He doesn't like a free people on his border between Poland, Romania, and Hungary, which are NATO allies. He does not want this free people. He never has. He doesn't want them part of NATO or the EU. But I think he is completely miscalculated, and based on our observation, and I can tell you, this was a bipartisan group of House congressional legislators that went, mostly from the Foreign Affairs Committee. I'm the number two ranking.
Well, people forget, they've known you as a congresswoman for so long. You were an ambassador before.
That's correct.
This, in Europe.
In Europe, and number two ranking Republican on House Foreign Affairs. So I was pleased to be and honored to be invited on what was a three-day whirlwind trip to Poland and the border of Ukraine. And we were there to really assess things on the ground, do some oversight, and come back to the administration and to our colleagues in Congress and to America and tell them what it is that we need. On top of all the meetings that we took with our European partners and Ukrainian partners and Secretary of State, one-on-one with Secretary Blinken, who we saw eye-to-eye with on nearly everything by the time our group and delegation was finished talking with him.
Well, you come back, and all of a sudden, there's this huge package of not just food and not guns, but butter. I mean, not just butter, but guns, right?
That's correct. And what we expressed to the Secretary, and certainly to our members of Congress, was that they really had two requests. One was they needed to stay in the fight. They needed more weaponry. They needed more lethal aid. They needed not our boots on the ground. They want to fight their own fight. They want to fight for their own homeland. But they need our help and support when it comes to weaponry. So we are sending them javelins, stingers, surface-to-air missiles, guns, rifles, ammo, anything, drones from Turkey. It's not just America. You know, the world has rallied around this cause and this people.
Can they win? I mean, it feels like the Red Army at some point will win this war.
So we visited with the 82nd Airborne and General Donahue, who are there in Poland on the ground in this large facility that I can tell you now, because it's been reported, is surrounded by Patriot missiles, so that they have a defense system. And this is where they're receiving all of the lethal aid and humanitarian aid that's coming in. And what General Donahue told us their job was there, the 82nd, was to assure our allied nations and NATO. So assure and deter. Assure the NATO allies and their friends in Poland and deter.
Well, that's got to be very important to Poland, because they've had allies before that weren't that great of allies.
And they've never had our boots on the ground there in Poland. So they were very grateful and reassured to have that. But the key was also to deter Putin. And he said to me, Congresswoman, we need to do three things. We've got to keep Ukraine in the fight. We have to continue to wear out Vladimir Putin's already diminished army, which is not what they thought it was. And number three, we can't escalate. Try not to escalate, because at the end of the day, what Russia does have is nukes.
It looks to me like there's a... At some point, the Red Army will take Ukraine, if they can afford it. At some point, maybe they run out of food, right, or money, or...
He can do this. He can collapse it, destroy it, turn it into a wasteland, but he will never conquer it. This is a people that is there with incredible resolve to fight. I was on the border. The day I was there, 132,000 refugees flowed across. Now there's some 2.5 million Ukrainians who have fled Ukraine into various countries, mainly Poland, but all across. And I can tell you, the sight brought tears to everyone's eyes. These are mothers and children, women and children, who are saying goodbye, giving the last hug to a son, to a husband, to a father, who is dropping them at the border and then heading right back in to fight the fight.
They say that they've said they needed SWIFT and different things. They say they need planes. There was a deal in Poland that apparently America is not going to do that would have gave them planes they could fly. Should America do that?
Yes, absolutely. It's no different than what we're doing now. Now, we don't have to go through this silly jig of going back to Ramstein, whatever. They're there in Poland. The Ukrainians are only trained on Soviet-era weaponry. Mm-hmm. So they need a MiG, not an A-10, not an F-16. They can come into the location there in Poland where they're picking up everything else, fly them out, truck them out. I don't know how they get them out, but get in the air. The Ukrainians want air support. So we went back and said this. They need military support. We believe they need these planes, and we did this on a bipartisan basis. We also believe they need humanitarian aid and care too. But also the number one ask that we had, stop funding Putin's war, America. Joe Biden, stop importing 695,000 barrels per day of Russian oil.
Well, before we get in the oil, they asked for a no-fly zone. You're a very unique person to ask because you've had to give that hug to a son to go into harm's way. A no-fly zone has a real potential to lead to you having other mothers having to give that hug to their kids. Should there be a no-fly zone?
They can impose their own no-fly zone if they've got airplanes to do so. I believe they can. And with the surface-to-air missiles, with the drones from Turkey, there are ways for them to control their airspace in a better way if we give them the supplies. We're giving them everything else, all sorts of other lethal aid. I can't imagine why we wouldn't. But again, they want to do this themselves. They don't want our boots on the ground. They want to fight this fight. And as I said, I watched these fathers and sons and older daughters turn right around and go back in to fight the fight.
Well, let's get into the oil.
The oil.
So you come back and said, we should stop buying Russian oil. A little easier for America to do than, say, Germany or France or someone. Said we should stop. The president agrees, came in, no more oil. Now, how does that strike an old boy? Let's say you're working on that big new gas station out 44 in Fenton, and it's costing you $4 to fill up your Ford. I mean, we have, obviously, there's no way to compare what we're going through here to anyone in Ukraine. But if you're a guy, a construction worker, doing drywall on that gas station, you really can't, you don't go out to dinner at some nice restaurant. You don't go to Chili's. You go to McDonald's now, you don't have the value menu. I mean, it's a real thing that's hitting folks.
Inflation, and this is Biden's inflation crisis, it was started some 14 months ago by his incredible overspending spree. I mean, it's too much money, government money, too much paying people not to work, that was too many dollars chasing too little goods. And gas is the same way. I will not let President Biden blame high gas prices at the pump on a two-week war with
you think
Putin.
Anybody buys that?
Well, they're crazy.
Be honest, you could probably put a quarter of this on that war, 30 cents maybe.
Not even.
I mean,
but
you talk about President Trump, and look, I know, President Trump had a lot of shortcomings. However, when I filled my Ford up, it cost about a third what it costs now. Well, now, you could say the president doesn't affect gas prices. Well, maybe Joe Biden should call Trump and just say, hey, what did you do that worked so well?
I'll tell you what President Trump did that worked so well. We were much more energy independent. We had a Keystone pipeline that was turned on, and we had that power. We had permits for oil drilling, you know, national gas. We were drilling in Anwar. We were allowing fracking and shale to happen. We were energy independent. In fact, we were exporting it, much cleaner LNG than anybody in Europe is getting from Russia.
Even
so,
your Democrat colleagues want something a little bit like Emanuel Cleaver, right? When you say it's time to put a drill bit in the ground, does he argue?
Well, AOC, the Squad, and the Green New Deal folks don't like any bit of it.
I mean, someone with sense. There's Democrats that do have
you
sense.
You bet there are. And I saw him on this trip, and I also see him throughout Congress. I gave this same speech.
What's the argument
speech
to keep a drill bit out of the ground right now?
We're trying to worry about climate change. I have no idea. It's not an argument that
it's snowing on St. Patrick's. Yeah, I think the climate's going to be okay.
I think the climate's going to be okay. And what we have is lower this inflation, lower the price at the pump. I put this at Joe Biden's feet. The day he entered office, he shut down
Keystone. Trump had his bluff in on the Saudis a little bit better than Biden does. Biden does not seem like, with Trump, there was an air of unpredictability that was probably dangerous. Maybe it also helped a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you, this President Biden has led from behind. I don't care whether it was his weakness and his lack of leadership and strength on Afghanistan, whether it is when the first thing he does, he comes in, he throws out the Iran deal, shows weakness to the Ayatollahs. The Russians hack our colonial pipeline. He doesn't do anything to fight back. This president came in. We drug him to the table here. We wanted sanctions against Russia much earlier as a deterrent. Deterrent, Scott, not as a, you know, after he was already had boots on the ground and had invaded Ukraine. The key that President Trump always understood was, you know what? You've got to come in with a firm hand, and you have to show that strength up front, and it makes others think twice about whether or not they're going to push you or provoke you.
Last week, Senator Talent was in that seat, and he said probably the end of this is that Russia is a vassal state of China. Do you disagree with that assessment?
Well, China definitely has the upper hand. It used to be the other way around, yeah. And the Chinese have been disappointing on many fronts to us. But I will say this. I think there are allies and world leaders, including in China and beyond, that are watching how Putin is right now, I believe, being crushed by a world community. And it's not just by countries. There are companies fleeing. There are financial systems fleeing. They are being isolated like the pariahs, like the butcher he is. I believe that Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. And you know what? Some of our other enemies out there, whether they're in Iran, North Korea, or China, ought to be watching closely to how the world has rallied behind a people with a fundamental cause of freedom and independence and liberty and living their own life in their own sovereign country. So I don't believe that President Biden has shown much leadership on this. I believe that it is American people and frankly, this bipartisan Congress that is leading him to the table on this, and I hope that we can do it with urgency, because one of the other pieces that I left Poland and Ukraine with, time is of the essence. And if we don't get them this lethal aid, if we don't get them the humanitarian assistance that they need, he's shelling and bombing humanitarian corridors, maternity hospitals, orphanages. This man is a butcher, and he won't necessarily stop with Ukraine. We'll see if we can shut him down before.
Last question, speaking of time. Redistricting is hanging over everything in Jefferson City right now. There seems to be a running theme. They can just draw whatever district they want, and you'll just win it. What is your thoughts on redistricting?
Well, that is up to our state legislature. I hope that they can come to an agreement and do their constitutional duty, which is to draw a congressional map, as they are supposed to do, in conjunction with the census every 10 years. I am a filed candidate for Missouri's 2nd Congressional District. I am going to run. I am going to win. I am pleased and honored to serve in any district that the Missouri legislature decides to draw.
We should have time to twist your arm and see where you wanted that district to go. Hope you'll come back after the districts are drawn and talk about the end result on This Week in Missouri Politics.
Thanks for having me.
And we have a big announcement. Now you get to not only watch This Week in Missouri Politics on the internet, St. Louis, Kansas City, Mid-Missouri, on KMOS, where a part of their friends, Mo the Mule, here at University of Central Missouri, will be on the PBS affiliate all over. You can watch down in Sedalia, Warrensburg, Columbia, Moberly, even in Jeff City. We'll be off next week, but in 2 weeks, KMOS. Look for your local listings and find us there for This Week in Missouri Politics.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back. Senator Jim Lemke after this.
All across Missouri, our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads, because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations. and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right-to-work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work. Ameren Missouri.
Welcome back to Week in Missouri Politics. The fashion plate of the Missouri Capitol, Jim Lemke, thank you for joining us again.
Good to be with you.
Lane Koch, Republican strategist, thank you for making time.
Happy to be here.
Kevin Windham, legislator here in St. Louis, glad that you joined us again.
Thanks for having me.
And Ryan Hawkins, the sharpest tongue to come out of a beard like that in a long time. Let me start with something, though.
Sure.
We just had Congresswoman Wagner on Ukraine. So, okay.
Sure.
Average Missourian. It's right. Obviously terrible. It's a tragedy. I don't know if folks do care. Why should they care?
Right.
Do you care enough sanctions? Nobody even knows what that is.
Right.
But it looks like maybe these sanctions are kind of real, it feels like.
Yeah.
Sending them guns. I think everybody's for that. But maybe not enough to send a Missourian out of Whiteman Air Force Base over in harm's way to do a no-fly zone.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that the average Missourian. I know that this average Missourian doesn't think that we should be sending troops or a no-fly zone at this point. It does feel like the sanctions have some teeth this time, and it wasn't just we're gonna tax you a little bit. I mean, I think that there's some real teeth to it. Now, what I do hope that the average Missourian is able to do in a conversation when they talk about their freedoms, do they care enough about this country's and the freedom and democracy as a whole, and say what this autocrat is doing is wrong? Shelling a hospital, shelling a school, we're seeing dead bodies. When this country is saying we are democratically elected, we have our own freedom. I hope that the average Missourian looks at this and says, this is where we make our stand about freedom. It's not about a trucker convoy. It's about Ukraine and a democratically elected government.
And then Koch, the president, come out and said, we're not going to buy Russian oil anymore. Well, I mean, I don't know if it is possible to make American gas go up anymore, but if it does, I think that trucker convoy might not care much about Ukraine.
Well, I think the trucker convoy and the average Missourian does care about what's going on in Ukraine, but voters really care about what's going on with their pocketbooks first. Like, people are really struggling putting gas in their tanks and so forth. I know they want to stick it to Russia, which is good, but we do need to make sure that people can afford their daily cost of living before they can care about things that are going on overseas. And so most people that I'm hearing are saying we really need America's first policies.
Well, Senator Lemke, a guy in South County right now, right? Maybe he's a union painter. Does he care? I'm sure he feels bad. It's a terrible atrocity. Does he care enough? And I see President Trump, who I think understood that union painter in South County pretty well. He seems to not want to say anything bad about Putin. I'm not sure that, I know we all feel terrible, but do you feel bad enough to see gas go up anymore over it?
Well, a couple things, Scott. First of all, our prayers go out to the people of
Sure.
Ukraine. I mean, we do care about these people. We care about freedom all over the world. This is going to sound trite, but, elections have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And would this war even happen if we didn't have this administration in office? I mean, the domestic energy policy has been a wreck. With this administration, okay? And, Putin has funded his war by us buying gasoline from him. So, would have happened. I think that Putin smells weakness, and that's a scary thing.
Let me ask you this. There was an air when you're in the Senate of a little bit of unpredictability. You didn't really know. Sometimes you might be aggressive on something. Donald Trump, air of unpredictability. Now, a lot of folks criticize it, and it had some downsides. Maybe that unpredictability kept the Saudis selling cheap oil. Maybe it kept Putin from running across the border. He did not do this under Trump.
Exactly. I think that you've got to show your strength sometimes. That's what I did when I was in the Senate, so people expected it out of me.
Representative, I mean, it's almost a joke now when there's a school shooting, some old thoughts and prayers. It's almost like we don't care. This is our sarcastic way of saying we don't care, right? With Ukraine, we all care. How much do we care?
Yeah, going back to your first example, I don't necessarily think it's a matter of not caring. I think it's a matter of how much do you care?
Sure.
Do you care enough to change your laws? Do you care enough to send your sons and your daughters overseas in order to fight a battle or fight a war? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that right now. But similar to what Lane said, I think that right now it's a lot of kitchen table issues. A lot of folks in my district are worried about how they're going to put food in their family's mouths right now.
Can I make two quick counterpoints? When we talk about domestic oil production is at a higher level now than it was in the 4 years under President Trump. If you really want to be upset about something, you know, if you're blaming Joe Biden for gas prices and not Vladimir Putin, you've got real issues.
Well, second issue, hold on. Second, more before Putin and
second issue on that, if an oil company is making record profits and they're not reinvesting in domestic oil production and using that for stock buybacks, that's another issue that needs to be looked at and can't be looked at for Joe Biden. And on the issue of, and my personal feeling on, you know, if you said this war wouldn't have happened with Donald Trump, no, because he was doing Vladimir Putin's bidding on Ukraine at the time.
Ask Zelensky that. I don't think he'd agree with you. The bombs falling on him today, there wasn't under Trump.
Well, I think that if he could continue to have a Donald Trump in office, we would have seen a foreign policy that allowed Vladimir Putin to do exactly what he wanted when he wanted.
Let me ask you about, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, let's not forget that President Trump got impeached for playing games with Ukraine and how they were going to get wasted.
Oh, I think he was fishing for some bad info from Ukraine on Biden. Oh. I think that's probably right. Let's talk about other bombs that were thrown this week in the state Senate. It feels like things are kind of coming to a head right now. You had Senator Rader take Devin a press conference. Then there was a back and forth between Senator Onder and Senator Brett or Senator Burles on the floor. It felt like she had a bill, sexual assault survivors kind of bill of rights that she thought shouldn't be amended. There was an amendment Senator Bratton had, really kind of all blown up from there, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it again shows the division that has evolved in the state Senate since term limits, actually. There is a House mentality that has drifted over to the Senate side because of there being so many House members that have come into the Senate. In the old days, senators would stay for 10, 20, 30 years, and there was relationships. You had to have relationships, because if you didn't have a friendship or a good relationship with that person, either on the other side of the aisle, which there is no other side of the aisle in the Senate, everybody
sure.
is mixed up,
Senator,
right?
Yes.
Because you are expected to be deliberative, to develop relationships and work through things, the deliberative body. But that seems to have gone out the door. This idea that my bill cannot be amended, that's part of the legislative process. You know, in the day that I served in the Senate, if three or four senators, whether they were in the minority or the majority, had a problem with a piece of legislation, the floor leader would take that piece of legislation, set it on the informal, ask the senator,
sure.
set that on the informal calendar and work this out between your colleagues. You ask the question, why is there so much filibustering? Because we have a floor leader that makes majority members filibuster for 50 hours. Instead of working things out.
Kevin Windham, you're sitting across the rotunda. You're going to be like, yeah, just talk all day, boys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it may be a lot more House bills passed this year. Like you usually say, that may be the job of the Senate, and I'm not mad at this time around.
I mean, really, the state Senate doesn't need to start passing a bunch of stuff. That will relate to terrible laws for the state.
No, I mean, look, I think that you nailed it. And I'm going to talk more from a global set on this. There's no professionalism. There's no, let's be cordial, let's figure this out together. It has become, I only win if you lose. And and that has, if we're ever going to get to a system where we, you know, elected officials are caring more about their constituents than they are the next political fight, you know, that's where we have to get back to.
Lane Cook, I mean, if they just said, we're done, can't do anything, we're going to pass the budget and leave, the citizens are safe, right?
Well, in this case, we sent Republicans to Jeff City to work together. And in the case of this legislation, this is a sexual harassment bill. And the amendment was to get explicit books out of schools. It was completely appropriate. If you know you're trying to fight sexual abuse, this is books that are completely inappropriate to be in our kids' schools. Republicans should be working together. Not they should be there owning the liberals, owning the liberals, not fighting each other.
Well, I mean, in the Senate, you would hope they don't want to do that, but. I just want to know who's reading books out of the library in high school. I'm kind of impressed by that.
Kevin and I have, we have a really good solution to all of this. Send more Democrats to Jeff City.
I'll be honest with you, an actual establishing working opposition party would make the Republican Party better. I do believe that.
I've said it on this show. I've said it for years. I think supermajorities are not a good thing.
No.
I think they're problematic. You know, currently in the Missouri Senate, there's a civil war going on.
Sure.
And there are three parties. Mm-hmm. There are three parties. There's the moderates, the conservatives, and the Democrats.
You served when Victor Callahan was the leader of the largest faction in the Senate, I believe, right?
Yes.
I'm not sure, depending on how these primaries turn out, it may not be that way again. Yeah. You know, Rizzo may be the actual majority leader of reality.
And look who's fighting. I mean, you know, I had great relationships with Victor Callahan, Tim Green. I mean, and I fought with Democrats every day. Yeah. You know, but what's happening right now is a civil war. What one group of senators believes is the proper role and function of government, and then what another fraction, and then another. So we have three different parties in the Missouri Senate.
You still, though. I mean, the bills that are going to be on that calendar to pass, you probably didn't vote for that many of them.
That's
true.
They
get you some popcorn and say, go at it, guys.
That's true. And that's why I said I'm not mad at the Senate not passing a lot of bills this time around. But in the case of Senator Rader's bill, I think that she's really shown herself as a force and really really shown herself to...
The trailer park comment hit home for me. I like that.
I mean, that was a good one. I mean, I'm glad that she's defending herself, and you may not even recognize that she's only a second-year senator now.
But we're about to run out of time, so who won the week?
I've got a personal story. I've got a friend of mine, Simon, lives in D.C., former special operator. Just during this whole Ukraine crisis, just came to his family and said, I have to go do this. Matched up with a couple of people, went to Germany. He's going in and out of Ukraine right now, helping the effort.
Who won the week?
I was going with the women of the Senate all the way until the 11th hour, and then I'm going with Gussie Fahn because of MLB.
Yeah, he's a little disappointed about the DH, I'm not going to lie, but thank you very much, Deb. Who won the week?
I'm going with Eric Schmidt because last night he had a really successful fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago, and there's no question that in the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side, they've all been vying for who is the most Trump candidate, and after raising over $1 million last night at Mar-a-Lago, I think that picture of the two of them together
is going to help. I saw the guy that knows how those South County folks think in the background of that photograph, right?
Yeah.
Who won the week?
I'm going to say the people of Missouri. We've gotten to spring break, and I think we've perfected 8 bills.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's outstanding. I'm going to say Jeff Crocker and the guys in the Missouri Senate that do the security. They're put in impossible spots. No matter what they do, they're going to make somebody angry. They do a good job keeping the peace, and they don't get things. Sometimes they get attacked for it. So I'm going to say Jeff and all those guys up there that sit with me in the gallery and watch the Senate happen. And we hope you'll come back next week in 2 weeks. Here on ABC 30 in St. Louis, but also in 2 weeks you can join us at KMOS, PBS, in Central Missouri. We'll see you then.